I'm Bill Littlefield. Dallas Cowboys quarterback Tony Romo gave a concession speech this week, stepping aside for rookie Dak Prescott, and a lot of people thought the speech was a good one.
He's earned the right to be our quarterback. As hard as that is for me to say, he's earned that right.
That's where we're going to begin this week's three stories you should know. My guests this time around are Cindy Boren of The Washington Post and ESPN's Don Van Natta Jr. Welcome back to both of you.
Thank you, Bill.
Hi, Bill.
Cindy, please begin.
I thought Romo's speech was really remarkable because when was the last time you heard someone say anything really empathetic about someone else, particularly a competitor? You know, he realizes that this is Dak Prescott's team now and Ezekiel Elliott's. You know, you don't see this very often. And when you do, you're struck by the people who handle it so well and with so much grace. You'll remember when Peyton Manning left Indianapolis, he handled it tearfully and emotionally. And Tony Romo was, I mean, he opened up a vein and just sort of bled. He talked about being a kid and wanting to compete. You know, maybe he ends up someplace else like other great quarterbacks who have, you know, finished out their career in a uniform that they really look strange in, like, you know, Joe Montana and the Kansas City Chiefs. But it was a rare moment of what certainly appeared to be honesty. And, you know, for those of us who deal in sports with when all people do is spout cliches or don't spout anything at all. Yeah, I'm looking at you, Bill Belichick. You know, it was really something.
Don, you want to pick up the beat on that?
Completely agree. This took maturity and humility and courage, all traits that have been in very short supply in American life in 2016. And, you know, this is Dak Prescott's team, but it's also Jerry Jones's team. Jerry, of course, said, well, someday Tony Romo is going to be a great offensive coordinator. And he really did show leadership. I think that Tony Romo is going to be a great NFL head coach someday. I got to know Romo in 2014 when I did a profile of Jerry Jones. And he is a true leader at 36 years old. He's under contract through 2019. He may have more snaps in him, but barring an injury to Dak Prescott, I don't think we'll see it in Dallas. I don't think we'll see him on the field again. And so what he did is really setting up his post-playing career as an offensive coordinator first and ultimately a head coach.
On the other hand, he's 36 years old. It seems very logical to think he might be at the end of his career. And I wonder if it has dawned on Tony Romo yet that as long as he's only quarterbacking the second team in practices, the likelihood of injury has gone from probable to negligible. Cindy, rescue us from my gentle skepticism, please.
Well, it's always a good move to be skeptical, I think. But, you know, I think for Romo, he has had back issues. And every time, you know, he does come back, he gets hurt. You know, he spoke about still wanting to play. And, you know, if something happens to Dak Prescott, it's his team again. Maybe things would work out for him differently this year than it has in the past, when he's had such disappointment, crushing disappointment, really, in postseason. But, you know, I agree with Don. I think, you know, this is a guy, whatever he does, he's thoughtful, he's deliberate about it. And I think everyone had empathy with Tony Romo. Who has empathy these days?
All right, Don, you're up next. And I understand that, like a lot of us, you are still analyzing last week's presidential election, but you've come up with an interesting way to do it. So please.
Yes, Donald Trump's election was stunning, certainly confounding for many for all sorts of reasons. But I bet you haven't considered this one. This is the ninth consecutive time, nine, since 1980, that a golfer has beaten a non-golfer for the White House. You know, you look at the list of non-golfers, it's a loser's role. Jimmy Carter, Walter Mondale, Michael Dukakis, Bob Dole, Al Gore, John Kerry, John McCain, Mitt Romney, Hillary Clinton. None of these presidential nominees played golf. Every one of them lost to a golfer. Now, I admit this is obviously absurd political analysis, but it raises the question, why is that? And the streak raises another question. Why did we bother with all those polls when we had this apparently unbeatable metric to guide us to November 8th's result? So I want to hear your guys' theories.
Cindy, please. I want to hear your theories, too.
I think that's the definition of a good walk spoiled.
The election or golf?
Both.
Both, yeah.
No, golf. You know, I mean, I am fascinated by the list, and I will also point out that Hillary Clinton, you know, didn't really have the option to play golf because She graduated from high school before Title IX, or college, actually, before Title IX. You know, there really weren't a lot of options for women who wanted to play sports.
Don, I, too, am fascinated by your list. And is Mitt Romney really not a golfer? He would seem to have all possible qualifications. He must belong to a dozen country clubs.
I'm as stunned by that as you are, and also stunned that John Kerry is not a golfer.
That's
you think
a good
Kerry
point.
Kerry and Romney are both certainly the type, you know, at a central casting to be golfers. What's really interesting, I wrote a book called First Off the Tee about presidential golf. This is just sort of a metric that emerged from that research. My book is now 13 years old. You can buy it for a penny on Amazon. But it's an interesting metric that emerges when the New York Times was telling us that Hillary had a 90% chance of winning. Okay, the streak is over. Finally, Donald Trump, who owns golf courses, doesn't just play on them, he was going to finally be a golfer who would lose to a non-golfer, and here we are.
Yeah. All right. This week, supermodel Kate Upton tweeted that by leaving her fiancé, Justin Verlander, off their Cy Young ballots, two sports writers had done something to Verlander that only she is supposed to be allowed to do, and I'll leave it at that. Baseball writers should not be determining the winners of these awards. They're almost certain to pay too much attention to some candidates and too little to others. They have grudges, and a lot of baseball writers already take themselves far too seriously. Hitters should determine the winner of the Cy Young Award. They know who the best pitchers are. They're the ones who fool them. Managers should determine the MVP. They know who beats them. Provide the players and the managers with stats. Tell them they can't vote for their teammates. And Kate Upton would have nothing to complain about. Cindy, what do you think?
Well, I didn't realize that you were following Kate Upton quite so closely on Twitter, but...
This is a sports program. She's the fiancée of a great pitcher. It's an obligation. Somebody has to do it.
This has always been one of my pet peeves, frankly. Not that. Not you and Kate Upton, you know.
Kate Upton. Let's get that straight.
I tend to agree with you. Talk about building a wall. I think there should be a wall between the people that you cover and, you know, the people who conceivably are going to owe you something down the line for your vote. As a reporter, I always hated it. Don, you may disagree.
Well, I'm not a baseball writer, but I'm a colleague of many baseball writers, and I'll say I know a few who don't take themselves that seriously, Bill. But from a common sense perspective, this makes a lot of sense. I agree with you. You know, in the Academy Awards, cinematographers vote for cinematography, directors vote for best director. The players themselves know best, not the guys sitting up in the press box. And this is long overdue and should happen.
As I've listened to you, I've thought of another reason writers shouldn't be doing the voting. Writing is challenging work. Baseball writers don't need the distraction. Let them alone to write. That's why they got into the Dodge. And, well, that and the free food, I guess.
Well, and the Marriott points, yeah.
And all the glory, too.
Well, there, of course, there's that. And usually the wardrobe. They usually have fabulous wardrobes.
My guests for this week's three stories you should know have been Cindy Boren of The Washington Post and ESPN's Don Van Natta Jr. Thanks to both of you.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you.